Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Kedushin Daf Zayin. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur will begin at the very bottom line of Daf Vov Amid Beis. Before we begin the actual Gemara text, we have a nosei in the margin, nosei being the topic heading, which reads as follows: Dugmois shel kidushe kesef. We're going to see several examples of marriage established through money. However, in unconventional terms. When we say unconventional, what do we mean by the conventional? Very simply, man meets woman that he is interested in marrying, and she agrees to it. He gives her money, kesef, or something of money value, in exchange for her agreeing to marry him. By his handing her the kesef, the money, she is thereby married. In the examples that we'll see in the Gemara, we'll see the use of kesef, but not in the way, in the direction that we just described. Hence, we label it as unconventional. As we continue in our note, She'ein ho'ish noisein ha'kesef yeshirois le'isha. In the examples that we'll see, the money will not be given directly from the man to the woman. The last thing, well, according to the rules that we have learned till now, how then is this going to work? So, that's what we're going to see in the Gemara. We're going to have to establish some type of legal precedent for the handing of money from A to B in, we'll say, the unconventional way, but yet there is a bond that is nevertheless established. The marking that is most prominent in the upcoming section of Gemara will be a bow tie. You'll also notice there's a shaded in corner. With the upper corner shaded in, that indicates that the woman is the speaker in each one of the examples. And if the bottom corner is shaded in, that's an indication that the man is the speaker. If you skim ahead, and you can see you have three bow ties, and a fourth dashed bow tie will appear in the almost in the middle of Daf Zayin Omid Aleph. These represent three dinim and shela achas. They're three laws, three cases that are effective, and then a fourth scenario where the Gemara raises a question. So now we continue in the Gemara text, bearing in mind that we're going to speak about Kiddushin through Kesef, through money, but we're not going to see in this Gemara where the man, the husband, is handing the money to the woman, to the bride. The Gemara. Omar Rava. Tain mona leploni. The woman says to a man, give mona, money, to so and so, va'akadesh ani loch, by your giving the money, by your following my instructions and giving the money to so and so, I will thereby agree to your marriage proposal, to marry you. The ruling on this case, we're at the top of Daf Zayin Amud Aleph, where the Gemara read, va'akadesh ani loch, and I will be married to you, mikudeshes. Rashi on the top line says, on top of Zayin Amud Aleph, Va'kadesh Aniloch Ukshenosnoi Loi, when the man spoken to by the woman gives the money to so and so, Omar Law, he says to her, Hiskachi li, by my giving the money to so and so as per your instruction, so you be married to me. Mikudeshes, that's effective. V'apagav delo moti hanol yoda. This is a very important phrase. Even though she, the woman, is not directly benefiting in any immediate way. It's true she has pleasure by the fact that her instructions are being heeded, but nevertheless she's not receiving anything. She's not receiving any physical pleasure, as opposed to a case where a woman receives money from the man who wants to marry her. You'll ask then, how does this work? How does the woman in this case become married? So the Gemara says, Midin Arev. We've used a double underline to highlight several principles. And on the side, under the Mivneh heading, the structural note, we indicate Midin Arev, Eved, and Shnehem. Two are principles, and the third is a combination of the two. The term Arev is a reference to a guarantor in a loan. Mr. A loans money to Mr. B, but only because Mr. X is guaranteeing that Mr. A will recover his loan. Our hope, or in general, a loan ought to be paid back by the one who borrows. In our case, Mr. B should pay the money back to Mr. A. In the event that Mr. B does not pay back the money, so Mr. X guarantees that he, Mr. X, will compensate Mr. A. When we speak about a guarantor, he is legally bound to make good on the loan. So he is binding himself, he's giving over himself, he's obligating himself in a legal fashion, even though he doesn't receive anything. Is it beginning to sound a little familiar? Here we have a woman in our first example. She is binding herself to the marriage, even though she is not receiving anything. So there's a legal precedent for this idea. The Gemara spells this out. Orev, the guarantor. Lav afagav, is it not so? De lo moti hanol yode, komishabed nafshe, that even though he does not receive any pleasure, he's not receiving the loan, he's simply guaranteeing the loan. He's not receiving any pleasure, and yet he is binding himself. Hayitsunami, this woman as well, afagav de lo moti hanol yoda, even though she is not receiving the pleasure, she's not receiving, in this case, the money, komishabdo umaknia nafsha, she binds herself and gives herself over into the bond of marriage. Another case. A man speaks, and he says, Heloch mona, v'hiskachi liploni. Take this money, and through your taking of the money, be married unto so-and-so. The man who's speaking here is working as an agent, as a shaliach for the husband. So he's telling the woman, take this money, and through your taking of the money that the agent is pulling out of his pocket, it's his own money, and he's presenting the money to the woman in exchange for her agreeing to marriage so-and-so. Mekudeshes, if she agrees, so it works. And based on what does that work? So let's just think about this for a second. What's peculiar? The one who is laying out the money himself, he's not getting anything. He's not getting anything in return. And the one who is receiving the money is actually binding herself to someone else. This operates midin eved kanani. There's a precedent. The Gemara terms it eved kanani. That's a rather terse description, but it's a reference to a heathen slave that's owned by a Jew that gains his freedom. He's set to acquire himself while he's a slave, so he's owned by someone else. He can gain his own freedom if, in our case, the some outsider gives money to his owner. He pays the owner in exchange for the slave to go free. The slave has a certain amount of value to the owner. Some outsider presents that value to the owner, and in exchange, the slave goes free. So now, the Gemara explains and presents the analogy to our case. Eved Kenani, lav afagav delo kochoser velo midi kokoni nafshe. Is it not so in the case of the Eved Kenani, even though he is not laying out anything, he nevertheless acquires himself? In other words, he gains his freedom, he acquires himself, he buys himself, so to speak, even though he's not laying out any money. Hai gavra nami, the man who is going to be married in this scenario, afagav delo kochoser velo midi, even though he's not losing anything, he's not laying out any money, it's that agent that's laying out the money from his pocket. Kokoni lo lahayitza. That husband, nevertheless, in this case, he acquires the woman. That's the parallel to, we've used a dash underline to create this parallel, the slave, he acquires himself. In the case of this husband here, he acquires a wife. Even though in both cases, the one who was acquiring didn't lay out any money in order to acquire. A third case. And now this third case, you'll see we have a long point. We also mentioned in our introduction that this is in order to appreciate this case, we're going to have to combine the two concepts of Orev and Eved Kenani. Tain Mona Leploni, this is the woman speaking, she says to a man, give money to so-and-so, Va'akade Shani Lo, and by your giving the money to so-and-so, I will thereby be married unto him. Notice that the one who is gaining the wife is not laying out any money, and the woman herself isn't gaining anything. She's not receiving any payment either. This works, as the Gemara says, if the man who was spoken to was instructed by the woman to give the money to so-and-so, and through that she will be married unto that so-and-so, she is married. It works. Midin Shnehem, by combining the principles that we learned by Orev and Eved Kenani. The Gemara spells everything out. Orev, in the case of the guarantor, Lav afagav de lokomoti hano liodei. Is it not so that even though he doesn't get anything, komishabed nafshe, he nevertheless binds himself, he obligates himself, hai itzonami, the woman in this case as well, afagav de lo komoti hano liodo, even though she is not receiving any pleasure, komakanyo nafsha, she is binding herself over to that man, to the outsider. The Gemara says, but me dummy, how can you compare this case to the Orev? Orev, hai deka koni lei kachoser mamona. When we speak about the Orev becoming obligated, he's bound over to whom? He's bound to the lender. Well, the one to whom the Orev is bound, he laid out money. He laid out the loan. That's what kachoser mamona means. Literally, he lost money. It cost him in the sense that he laid out money as a loan. Oh, so as a result of his laying out money as a loan, so it's understandable why the Orev is bound to him. Hai gavra, the husband to be in this case, Kokoni lo lahai itzav lo choser velo midi. He's receiving the woman, like the lender received the guarantor. He is receiving a wife, but he didn't lay out anything. V'lo kachosar v'lo min. He didn't lay out anything. So how does he acquire her? How does he acquire a wife without laying out anything? And one says, oh, if that's what's bothering you, we have a precedent for acquisition without actually laying out in return for the acquisition. Eved Kenani Yochich, let the case of the Eved Kenani who acquires himself without laying out any money. Delo kochoser mamona. In the case we described before, where some outsider paid his owner the money for the freedom of the slave, the slave himself did not lay out anything. V'ka koni nafshe, and he acquires himself. So too, we can understand how that, in our last example, the man who is receiving the bride, he's getting a wife, he did not lay out anything. Mi dami, but nevertheless, there's still a lack of comparison. Hasam, in the case of the Eved Kenani, hach deko makni kokoni, the owner, he is the one who is transferring ownership of the slave to that slave. He's taking his ownership, he's makne, he is transacting his holding in the slave over to the slave. So there's a relationship in that transaction called Eved Kenani, where the one who is makne, the master, who is transferring ownership of the slave to the slave, kokoni, he is acquiring the money. He's receiving the money from that outsider who's willing to pay for the slave's freedom. That's in the case of the Eved Kenani. So there we can understand how the Eved gains his freedom because the one who is granting him his freedom at least is getting something in return. He's getting the payment from the outsider. Ocha. Hi, Itza. In this case, the woman who is being makne herself, she's the one who is makne. She would be the parallel to the owner of the slave. Hocha, hi itza, komakne nafsha. She is giving herself over to some husband as a wife. Veloka, kanya, velomini. And she's not receiving anything. The money in this case is going to the man. So how can you have someone who is giving themselves over and at the same time not receiving anything in return? And one says, oh, but there's a precedent for that. Orev Yochiach, the case of the guarantor, will prove that nevertheless is effective. Afagav delo kamoti hanoli odei, even though the guarantor is not receiving anything, Mishabe Nafshei, he nevertheless obligates himself to make good on the loan, to guarantee the loan. So by combining these two principles, and if you notice how we've tried to mark the Gemara carefully, we have dashed, underlined the phrases above. We had Eved Kenani Yochiach and Orev Yochiach. By combining these two principles, we then understand how the most recent bow tie example is effective. Boi Rava. And now a question. Heloch mona v'akadesh ani loch mahu. The woman speaks, and here she says to the man, directly to the husband, you take this money, and I will be married unto you. That's a very unusual in the sense that what we are used to is the man gives the money to the woman. The man is expected by the Torah to grant benefit to the woman, and in exchange for her receiving the benefit, she agrees to marriage. Here, the woman is giving the money to the man. And by the man's acceptance of the money, she agrees to marry. Does that work? Omar Mar Zutra Mishmei Derav Papa Mekudeshes. Marzusha rules it works. A question follows, a long question. Omar Le Ravashi Lamar Zutra. Im Kane, if we're going to accept your ruling, you know what the result of that is in legal terms? Have le nechosim sheesh lahem achrayas, niknim im nechosim sheein lahem achrayas. Vanan ipchotnan. What you're describing is the woman is giving cash to a man. And as the man takes the money, along with the money, he is acquiring the woman. He's acquiring her in the marriage, in the sense of marriage. What we've described is nechosim sheyesh lamachrayas. That's a term, literally it has to do with properties that can serve as a guarantee. In general, nechosim sheyesh lamachrayas is a reference to real estate, to land. Land serves as a guarantee for people's debts. If a person borrows money, he's expected to pay back in cash. In the event that he doesn't have cash, so the lender will have, he has a right to take over the real estate of the borrower. He doesn't take over, and that rule applies even in the event that if you have a written loan and the borrower in the meantime after the loan had sold his property to someone else, the lender is entitled to seek the land from the purchaser. Not so in the case of nechosim she'ein lohem achrayas, in one word, portables, metaltalin. Portables are not available to the lender as a means of collection in the event that the borrower transferred, sold his portables or gave away his portables to someone else, even though it was after the loan. The lender does not have a lien upon portables, but he does have a lien upon land. Based on psukim, human beings, especially in the case of slaves, but we're going to expand it to people. People are compared to land in this sense. In general, if a person is conducting a transaction involving land and portables, so that if you just imagine that a person is, let us say, is buying someone's house and the yard, and there's a driveway, and there's also a car. There's a car in the driveway. The car is considered a portable. It's not real estate. If a kinyan, if the act of transaction is made on regarding the land, the portable will be transferred along with the land. If, however, the transaction that is appropriate for portables is made on the portable, in this case, someone drives the car 10 feet on the driveway, that transaction, that act of kinyan on the portable, if that's the kinyan that is made, will not cause the transfer of the land. So that land works in enabling the transfer not only of the land but portables together with the land, but transactions on the portables will not enable the land to be transferred. That what we just described is what the Gemara refers to Rav Ashi is referring to. Let's read Rav Ashi again and his objection to Mar Zutra. Mar Zutra ruled that if the woman gives the money to the husband and says, by your taking the money, I will be married to you, and you rule that that works, so Rav Ashi says to Mar Zutra, and we're going to read again the words, Im Kain Havele, well, what you've just described then is Nechosim Sheyesh Lohem Achrayas. That's a phrase, in this case, instead of referring to real estate, it's referring to the woman. We said people are compared to land. Niknan Im, she is then being transferred together with the kinyan, the transaction that was made on the money. Niknim im nechasim she'ein lohem achrayas. That by his taking her money, she is being transferred along with the money. So the kinyan is made on the money. He draws the money. He receives the money from her. The money is an example of portables. That's what the phrase nechasim she'ein lachrayas means. And through the kinyan, through the active transaction made on the portables, the woman is acquired along with it. And yet, that is the opposite of what we know. And Ravashi's question is that, well, we've learned the opposite. Namely, nechasim she'ein lohem achrayas, portables are niknim im nechasim she'esh lohem achrayas, are acquired along with land. Or people, but kesef, bishtar, b'chazaka. These are the three means of the acquisition, three means through which a kinyan or acquisition is made for land: payment of money, a document, or chazaka, the use of the land in a way that you show possession. Omar le samar zutra responds to Ravashi's objection, and he says, "Mi savris de omra le agav." Who is to say, like you are thinking in your question, that she said to him, "Along with the money that I give you, so I'm gonna be yours as well. I'll be yours along agav." Agav means along with, or on top of. But in this case, along with what Rav Ashi was describing is quite accurate if the intent in the transaction is that the woman would be acquired along with the man's taking of the money. But that's not what is really happening. What is happening? Hacha b'adam choshev askinan. The man spoken of here is a man of great esteem, great significance, a man of high standing, of great importance. I'm sure everyone would agree with the feeling that one would have if you were to present a gift to a man of great importance and that individual agrees to accept your gift. The mere fact that he's accepting your gift gives you, the giver of the gift, a great amount of pleasure. In fact, if you had to weigh the pleasures, the very important man that is accepting your gift, you might be giving him something of actual little significance. And he nevertheless takes your gift with his taking of your gift, just to illustrate this and bring it down to practical terms, imagine you meet the president of a significant country, and you give him a cheap writing pen, and he accepts your pen and starts using it in front of you. Would you not have a great amount of pleasure from it? As far as the president of the great country that received your pen, to him the pen is almost insignificant. But nevertheless, he starts using it. That gives a great amount of pleasure to the person who is giving him the gift. That's what is happening over here. The woman is speaking to a man of great esteem, great significance, and she is offering him the money, the gift, or whatever of cash value. And he agrees to take it. The Gemara says, as a result of the pleasure that she has in his accepting the gift from her, gomra umakna le nafsha. In exchange for the pleasure she is receiving, she is thereby giving herself over to him. So what we've described here has nothing to do with a kinyan agav, with nechosim sheyesh lamachrayas being niknim agav nechosim shein lamachrayas. But rather, she is in fact the receiver of great pleasure. In exchange for the great pleasure that she's receiving by his taking her gift, her money, she is willing to give herself over in exchange. In exchange, again, to repeat ourselves, for the pleasure that she is receiving. This kind of, this idea of pleasure is something that ultimately could be translated into money. How much money would someone pay to have such a pleasure? And we've seen in previous examples, previous sukkahs, that the pleasure that one receives is in fact something that intellectually we translate into money terms. So at the end of the day, this woman really is receiving, she is the receiver of Kesef Kiddushin. We continue with a point. This the point that we see here, we have a, you notice in our Mark Gemaras, by the way, if you need to access Mark Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. You'll notice that we have a semicolon, because we're going to read now the expression Itmar Nami, but it's not a, the Itmar Nami means, it means that it is stated as well. When you see a phrase like that, generally it's a continuation of that which was stated immediately before it. In this case, it's a throwback to what we had learned earlier. Itmar Nami Mishmei Derava, it was likely taught in the name of Rava, V'chein Le'inyin Mamona. And like we said above, the three different cases we had in bow ties, the three different cases that we had in solid bow ties, where we describe an effective marriage, the same will apply in sales. Mamona, Mamona means financial matters. The Gemara itself is, you can see, it's just three words, but it entails going over all three cases, and instead of a case of marriage, imagine it in the case of a sale. The Gemara doesn't spell out the examples, but Rashi does. Let's go through the Rashi together. The Chaim Linyan Mamona, the Rashi that we're looking at is just a few lines up from here. Hanach Shmaitza Derava the Alfino Kiddushin Midin Orev Umidin Evet Kenani Kainin Mamona. The teachings that we had in the name of Rava, his name, by the way, appeared at the bottom of Vav Amud Beis, where we opened up today's Shiur. Those laws of Rava, where we learned marriage from the cases, the precedents of the guarantor, the freedom of the Eved Kenani, these principles apply to Mamona. And Rashi goes on with three examples that conform to the three cases we had in the Gemara. But the focus is on a sale. Mochar, number one, Mochar lo sode. The Omar lo. Someone is selling a field, and the seller says, Tain hakesef leploni. He says to the buyer, the money that you have to pay for the field, give the money to so-and-so. Give the money, the payment for the field, give it to so-and-so. V'sodi mechuro loch bo. And through your paying him the money, you will acquire my field. That works. Kono midin orev. That transaction works, even though the seller isn't receiving any benefit. The seller, nevertheless, transfers ownership of the field. That is similar to the case of the Orev, where the guarantor didn't receive anything, yet he obligates himself, that's the equivalent, transferring over ownership of himself, so to speak, in the context of the loan, to the lender. Another case. Heilichmona, the buyer says, take this money, v'tehei sadecha mechura leploni, and through your taking of this money, I want your field to be sold to so-and-so. Kono leploni hasode midin eved. That so-and-so, that outsider who gains ownership of the field, gains it, even though he didn't lay out any money, The same way, the Eved Kenani gains his freedom, even though he, the Eved, didn't lay out any money. Another case. Tain mona leploni v'tikne lo sodi bo. Owner of field says to a person, he says, listen, you give money to so-and-so, and by your giving money to so-and-so, my field, the tiknet lo, means my unto him, my field will be transferred. So you have some outsider gaining the money and gaining the field. That works through a combination of Eved, Kenani, and Orev. And we saw that in the case of some outsider gaining a wife and also getting the money. The Gemara, after hearing this statement in the name of Rava, that the principles he said in the cases of marriage apply equally in the cases of sales, it was necessary to spell that information out. Utsricha, I need to be told that. In other words, just by telling me about marriage based on Eved Kenani, based on Orev, or a combination, I wouldn't have figured out that the same procedure would operate in the case of sales, and vice versa as well. Had this been spelled out in the case of sales, I wouldn't have known that it would be effective in the case of establishing a marriage. And therefore, both need to be spelled out. And that's what the Gemara spells out in the next few lines. This is all part of a long point, why it was necessary to spell this out in both cases. Utsricha, D'yash min kedushin, had we spoken about the effectiveness of these kind of deals in the case of marriage, Mishum daha itza nicha la b'choldehu. I'm sure it was obvious that in the cases above, we saw that the woman was going to be married, even though she wasn't receiving anything. These are effective to establish a marriage because of a principle that's unique to marriage. Because daha itza nicha la b'choldehu, a woman is happy with almost anything in order to become married. Rashi says, nichola lios niknes, to be acquired in marriage, to become a wife, but koldehu, bekinyan koldehu, even with the most flimsy type of transaction, v'afilu b'toivas hanal b'almo, even with something that's not tangible pleasure, but we'll say toivas hanal, the feeling of pleasure in general terms. The term toivas hanal has a specific legal connotation, but in the context of our discussion, we're going to understand it as a form of pleasure, even though she's not receiving something concrete, something physical. Why, or based on what do you say that a woman is willing to give herself over even for a flimsy type transaction? Kidder Reish Lakish, based on Reish Lakish's principle, Diyom Reish Lakish, Tav Lamaitav Tandu, Mi Lamaisav Armalo. From a woman's vantage point, it's better for her to be together with another person, with a man. Rashi says, Begufim Shnaim, Tandu, Du sounds like the word duo, two. Tandu means two bodies together, a husband and wife. Is better rather than remaining a life as a single woman. Armalo is a widow. A widow is the example of a woman who remains single. Avol mamona emolo, but in the case of a financial transaction, I would think not so. There you need to have a straightforward, solid transaction, kinyan, where a buyer pays the seller, and all other forms of payment wouldn't be effective. Therefore, it has to be spelled out. In addition to the effectiveness of these transactions with regard to marriage, they're effective also in momon. V'yashmin and momona, and had we taught only in the case of momon and relied on my extrapolating to the case of marriage, I would not have done so. Why? Mishum disyoyev lemechila. Possessions, finances, money, those are something that the owner of it can transfer it simply by mechila, by foregoing his ownership of it, even without receiving anything. Aval kiddushin emalo, but that concept of mechila, of foregoing, that's not appropriate for marriage. Therefore, tzricha, I need to spell out, in addition to orev and evet kenana being effective in the case of mamon, it's effective in the case of marriage, even though marriage is not nitan la mechila, it's not given to mechila. Nevertheless, these, we'll say, flimsy type transactions work. Flimsy, I'm using that term, maybe it's not the choicest expression, but it illustrates a transaction that's not the conventional, straightforward, direct pleasure that is achieved when the seller receives something concrete in exchange from the buyer. We continue now with a new discussion. On the side, we have a topic heading. Number one, Hiskatshi li lechatsoyai. A man says to a woman, I want you to be married to half of me. Number two, Chatsyech mikudeshes li. I, the man, I am marrying half of you. Are these effective or not effective? Omar Rava. We turn to the Gemara. Hiskatshi li lechatsai. He says to the woman, I want you to be married to half of me. Mikudeshes. She's considered a married woman. Chatsyech mikudeshes li. Half of you is married unto me. In other words, I'm marrying half of you. Hey, no, mukadisha, that's ineffective. If you skim ahead in the next several lines, you'll notice the house form appearing in alternate directions. On the side of the Gemara, we have a ma'akav, a marking. The house in its alternating directions enables us to keep track, ma'akav, to keep track of the discussion, the back and forth discussion, with the point facing up, kushyos al divrei Rava. They represent questions on Rava, and the inverted house indicates tshuvos, responses. Omar le Abaye le Rava. So Abaye raises a question. Mai shno chetzyech mikudeshes li, where the man says, I'm marrying half of you, the eino mikudeshes, why not? Isha amrachmona. The pasuk says, ki kach ish isha. The pasuk says, isha. V'lo chatz isha. Isha means a man is marrying a woman if he's marrying the whole woman, not marrying half of the woman. Hachinami ish amrachmona v'lo chatz ish. In the same pasuk, the word ish appears, man. And that would mean the man is marrying the woman, not half of the man marrying the woman. Omar le, Rava responds, Hachi hashta, how can you compare the two? Hosam, in the case of the woman, itza lebe tre lo chazya. In the case of a man marrying half the woman. What about the other half? What do you think? She's going to be married to another man? One woman is not fit to two men. Therefore, when a man expresses his interest in marrying half of her, he's saying something that is unacceptable in legal terms, because by marrying half of her, there's the suggestion that her other half is going to be married to another man, and that's not acceptable. El Gavra, when it comes to a man in Jewish law, in traditional Jewish law, I should say, in original Jewish law, Mi lo chazi le beitre, we call that bigamy, multiple women married to one man, that's legitimate. Is it not so that one man is fit to have two or more wives? V'hochi kamar lo. When he says to her, I want you to be married to half of me, half the man, what he's really saying is, de'i bo'ino leminsa v'achriti nasivna, that if I should want to marry another woman, using the analogy here, to marry my other half, I'm leaving that option open. That's legitimate. Hence, when he says, marry half of me, he is saying, my other half will be available for another woman. Omar Lei, Morzut Shebreder of Mori, LeRavina. Here's a question, takes a couple lines to develop, and then the answer that follows also takes a few lines to develop. Marzutra asks Ravina, when he says to her, I'm marrying half of you, the ruling we saw above was ineffective. Why should it be ineffective, though? V'nifshatu la kiddushi b'kula. Let the kiddushi. Now the word kiddushi means marriage, and it also means sanctification. I think at the beginning of the Masifta we described the concept of why the word kiddushin is used in the context of marriage when it has to do with sanctification. So when you sanctify, let us say, an animal as a sacrifice, up till now the animal could have been used for anything. When you sanctify it, it becomes reserved for the Almighty. So too, when a man marries a woman, up till that point she could have married just anybody. At the point of marriage, she now is limited to her husband. Why not continue the analogy in the following sense? The man who married half of the woman, let the sanctity that he imposed, the marriage that he instilled in half of her, spread throughout all of her, so that it becomes really, it should really be viewed as a regular marriage. He is in fact marrying all of her. Mi lo tanya, do we not have a precedent for this idea in the following source? And this source deals with sacrifices. That's why we gave a little bit of the introduction, how the two realms are related to one another. Ha'oimer raglo shelzu oila tekula oila. If a man is standing by an animal and he says, I want to sanctify the leg of this animal as an oila sacrifice, a burnt offering. The result of that statement is that the entire animal becomes sanctified. Now this specific example of leg and the sanctity spreading throughout the animal, this particular example is actually controversial. In other words, there's a machlokis about this example. V'afilu l'man domer ein kula ola, even according to the dissenting opinion that it does not become a total ola, that's in the event that he sanctified a limb that's not a life-sustaining limb. If a man said, I want the heart of this cow to be an ola, without the heart, the animal is good for nothing. And he sanctified the heart. Havya kula ola, the entire animal becomes an ola. The kedusha spreads. When you speak about half a person, if you split a person down the middle, a human being cannot live with himself split into halves. So when he sanctified, when he married half the woman, why do you not say that the sanctity that's represented by the marriage spreads throughout all of the woman, as is the case in someone who is Makdish Adover Shan and Shoma Tuluyabo. Me, dummy. How can you compare the case of partial half sanctification, or Adover Shan and Shoma Tuluyabo, to the case of marrying half a woman? Hasan Behema. There you're dealing with an animal. The animal doesn't have a mind of its own. So when you instill sanctity in half the animal, or in the heart of the animal, the sanctity will spread without any objecting force. Ha-ha, in the case of a woman, you're marrying a woman, she has a mind of her own. Das acheres, she has her own mind. So that you're sanctifying half. Who? There's her mindset, her feelings. Maybe she doesn't want to be totally her entirety to be married to the man. So her mindset is an independent force that serves to block the spreading of the sanctity throughout all of her. Ha lo damyo elo leha. If you want to make an analogy between a sacrifice and marrying half a woman, That would be parallel to the following. Di Omar Reb Yochanan Behemo Shel Shnei Shutvin, an animal owned in partnership by two people. Hikdish Chetzya V'chozar V'lokcha V'hikdish V'hikdisha. One of the partners sanctified his half of the animal, sanctified it as a sacrifice. The other half of the animal was then purchased by that very partner that sanctified his half. And after purchasing the second half of the animal, he then sanctified it. What is the result of this? We'll call this two-stage sanctification. Kedosha v'eino kreva v'oisa tmura u'tmurosa kayotze ba. Several points are made over here. The animal is considered sanctified. That would mean that you cannot use this animal for personal purposes. However, it cannot be offered as a sacrifice. And if someone were to try to replicate the sanctity that this animal has onto another animal, replication, which we call tumura, would take effect. And that second animal, utmurasa kayotze ba, that replica animal will have the same characteristics of this animal, i.e., it cannot be offered. The Gemara then from this teaching reaches three conclusions, which we'll continue on to Amud Beis. But before we continue with that, let us look at Rashi to see how this connects with the case of a man marrying half the woman. The Rashi that we're looking at starts three lines from the bottom. Ha lo damyo v'chule, etc. Maskono de tirutzahu. This is simply the conclusion of his response. And we have a marking, the long answer marking, reflects what Rashi is pointing out. This is all part of an answer. Ein dovor ze doime, the issue of marrying half a woman. If you want to make an analogy between it and sanctification of animals, it's similar to the following. Elo lebehemo shel shnei shutfin, an animal owned by two in partnership. Deiko das acheres makeves bo. When you have the two partners and one of them sanctified his half, we say that the sanctity doesn't spread automatically to the other half because there's another owner here. V'hasam lo amrinon detikdash kula al pi ho'echad. There we don't say that the entire animal becomes sanctified as a result of the one partner's sanctification. So you see that there's this analogy when you have a second partner. That is like the woman's mindset after the man had married half of her. The other half of her is represented by the woman's own mindset, similar to the second partner. And in the case of the animal owned by two partners, with one sanctifying his half, the Kedusha does not spread to the rest. Rashi continues, V'eino kreva. Even though the first partner, after sanctifying his half, then bought the second half and sanctified it, it nevertheless cannot be offered as a sacrifice on the altar. Since the animal's initial contact with sanctity, when only half of it was sanctified, it wasn't fit to be offered. You can't offer on the altar an animal that was only half sanctified. Shelo kitcha elochetia. You only had sanctified half of it. What then do you do? V'timocher v'yakriv acheres b'domel. So you'll sell this animal, and the money that you get can be used to purchase an animal that you will offer as a regular sacrifice. But the animal itself that was sanctified in halves cannot be offered. V'oisetmura im heimir bavi did Temura the replication of this animal in trying to replicate its sanctity onto another animal. It takes effect. The Temura Sakirtzipa, Deino Kreva, it is not offered. The Mikayach Kedusha Dechuyo Basa, because that second animal came from a disqualified type of sanctity. Disqualified in the sense of not being able to be offered on the altar. This having been said, the Gemara continues, Shema Mino Tlas. From this week, we reach three conclusions. And these three conclusions have ramifications to other areas of halacha, other sugyas and shas, other portions, other sections in the shas where these issues come up. So we continue at the top of Omid Beis. Number one, Shema Mino, Bale Chaim Nidchin. This is an issue that is the subject of controversy, but from here we would conclude that animals, not just meat that's slaughtered, but living animals, once they are rejected, they are rejected permanently. There is an opinion that says that the concept of dichui, of rejection, applies only to animals after they've been slaughtered. But animals while they're alive, even though there's an interim point of time that they might not be acceptable, they can resume acceptable status later. And according to this Gemara, we would conclude that Bale Chaim Nidchim. How did we see that? Well, when at the point that you sanctified half of it, even though later you sanctify the other half, it's been in the interim, it's been disqualified, and the animal is still alive. Ushma mina dichui meikara have dichui. Rashi on the third line from the top, dichui meikara kagon zu. Dichui meikara was disqualified at the outset. Shemitchilas egdesha, at the first point of contact with sanctity, its initial reaching of sanctity, at that point, lo nireis likrav. It wasn't fit to be offered. Its initial contact with sanctity was when half of it was sanctified. It wasn't fit at that point to be offered. The ikol amandomar de polik, there is a dissenting opinion that disagrees and says, ein dichui elo benir v'nitche. Dichui, the concept of being disqualified, of literally pushed aside, applies only to things that had once been fit, once been qualified. Only then do we say, if it was fit and then disqualified, it's rendered unfit. But something that initially had not been fit could gain acceptance later on. That, however, is not what our Gemara is saying. Number three, Ushmamino Yesh Dichui Bedomim. Again, we look at Rashi, Yesh Dichui Bedomim, Yesh Toiras Dichui. Toiras means the laws, the rules of disqualification apply, Bedover She'enu Kadosh Ela Ledomov, to those entities whose sanctity is only one of value. When we speak about Kedushas Domim, you can appreciate that concept in contrast to Kedushas Haguf, where the body is inherently sanctified, as would be the case in something that you would offer as a sacrifice on the altar. Here, we're dealing with something that doesn't have Kedushas Haguf, as we've already explained. It was disqualified from Kedushas Haguf at the point that you had sanctified only half of it. And yet, this entity that has Kedushas Domim is subject to disqualification. Kigonzu shemitchila lo hikdisha elo ledomeo. This animal, when you sanctified half of it, the concept of sanctity applied only in terms of value. Sheti mocher v'yikdishu demei chetzio. At that point, you would have sold it, and then the money that you received, half of the cash would have been sanctified, with which you would have bought a sacrifice. Share. After all, to offer the animal in halves, that couldn't be. And nevertheless, we saw that this animal, whose contact with sanctity was in terms of value, is disqualified permanently from being fit to be brought on the altar. And we don't say the following: that dichui is relevant only to things whose body was sanctified for offering purposes. As you can see here, we're expanding the application of dichui, of disqualification, to things that were not limited to kedushas aguf, but even to those things that had kedushas domim. If these concepts are new to you, because this is, let's say, the first time that you're learning them, fear not, because as you go through all of Shas, these concepts will appear again and again, and you'll thereby gain fluency and greater familiarity as you see these sugyas applied in various contexts. We're turning back to the second line from the top of the Gemara, where we encounter a new marking, a diamond. We glance in the margin at the side of the Gemara. You see, we've written there a nosei / mivneh, a diamond appears. Sidra shel she'elois birur, a series of questions of clarification, al kiddushin bepruta, where the marriage is attempted through the offering of a pruta. Pruta meaning the smallest form of denomination, of currency. Kemo shtayim bepruta, or the example, a man tries to marry two women with one pruta. Ubitcho porosho bepruta. A man acquires, talks to the father of a girl and says, I want to marry your daughter and also buy your cow, and he offers the man a pruta. Needless to say, at the beginning of the Masechta, we saw Machlokes Beisham Beis Hillel, what's the minimum amount of money that would be considered acceptable to establish a marriage. Beis Hillel said a pruta. Less than a pruta would not be acceptable. So that if, just for illustration purposes, if with one pruta you could buy two paper clips. One paper clip is something of value, but it's less than a pruta. It's worth a half a pruta in our example. Now the Gemara. I always advise, before going into the text and you see a series marking, just scan the page. Do you see how many diamonds appear? If you scan down the page, you'll notice quite a few of these diamonds appear. Each one is introducing another question, but the common denominator has to do with the pruta amount. The Gemara. Boi Rava. Chetziech bechatzi pruta, v'chetziech bechatzi pruta. We should note we have a new marking, and on the side, under this volcano shape, Sidra shel she'elois tachas boi rova harishona, there's a series of questions that follow from this first rova question. B'signon rubam, the majority of these questions are in the style of Im Timtzeh Lomar, meaning, after presenting two sides of the first question, the Gemara continues with assuming one of the two sides and then develops a second question. Likewise, that second question will have two sides of analysis. Choosing one of the two sides, we then will proceed to a third question. That's called the Im Timtzeh Lomar style. So the first question that Rava raises involves a man saying to a woman, half of you with a half a pruta. In other words, we have the paper clip example we had before. Two paper clips could be purchased with one pruta. So he gives the woman a half pruta value, one paper clip, and says, I'm marrying half of you with this paper clip. V'chetziech b'chatzi pruta. And he gives her the second paper clip and says, I'm marrying your second half with this second paper clip. Mahu, is this a marriage or not? Aleph, you can see the Aleph, and then at the end of line O, Vilma, Beis. first side of the question is, Kevan di Omar la chatsi pruta paska, since he said to her, half a pruta, that is the, that paska means that's a, that's an end, it stops, meaning it's like he is marrying half of her. We already saw that marrying half a woman is ineffective. Oy Dilma, or do we say, Moine v'hoylechu, he's counting out, and it's part of one continuum. And that the offer of, when he said, Chatzi pruta, chetziech b'chatzi pruta, half of you, for half a pruta, he was saying that in anticipation of his continued offer of marrying her second half. So that it's not the, it's not like marrying just half a woman as one, independent marriage offer, and then the second half as a second independent marriage offer. In Timsilomar Moinivahilechu, if you accept for the time being that Chetzech b'chatzi pruta, Chetzech b'chatzi pruta is really Moinivahilechu, he's simply counting out his half prutas in anticipation of continuing his statement into a full marriage. Chetzech b'pruta v'chetzech b'pruta ma. What would be if he says, I'm marrying half of you with one pruta, and your other half with one pruta? Kevan di omar lo bepruta upruta poskelim, you'll say, since he's using a full pruta in his offer, so it, each pruta represents a separate offer of marriage. Poska, the mil say, he's breaking apart, he's separating his comments. And if you say that, we would then say that the beginning of his speech is not in anticipation of what he continues to say later. And he was simply making a mistake, thinking that he could marry half a woman. Oy Dilma, or maybe, kol b'yayme mayne v'halichu, since it's all in the same day, so it's considered as if he's simply counting out in anticipation of completing his statement, i.e. marrying the entire woman. Im Timsilomar, if you accept the Bay's approach, kol b'yayme mayne v'halichu, that which he says in the same day is simply like mayne v'halichu, an opening statement that's in anticipation of the closing statement. In other words, it's one marriage, it's one continuous offer of marriage. Chetziech bepruto hayoim vechetziech bepruto lemochor mahu. Let's say the man proposes to the woman, half of you with one pruta today, and the other half of you with one pruta tomorrow. Kevan diomer lo lemochor poska, since he mentioned tomorrow, so he's breaking off from his statement of today. So then it results in his really marrying only half of her today. And that's ineffective, and it doesn't combine with what he says tomorrow, or what he anticipates with regard to tomorrow. Oy Dilma, hachi karmalo, or maybe what his intention is, kedushin maschulu me'oyid, no, migmar lo nigmru ad lamochar. What he's trying to say is that I'm starting the Kiddushin process today, and it will be completed tomorrow. Up till this point, we don't have any answers. You can see that we have a dashed volcano shape. The reason for this is that it's not based on the Imtim Tzolomar style. He says to her, Shnei chatsiayach bepruta mahu, your two halves with one pruta. Hocha vadai b'chad zimna komala. Here, you might say it's clear that he's speaking to her in one shot. Ol dilma ein isha miskadeshes l'chatsoin klal. Or, possibly, any mention of halves is anathema to marriage. A woman doesn't get married when you make reference to half of her in any form, teku. So these questions remain unresolved. Boy Rava, Shtei Benosech L'Shnei Bonai B'Pruta Mahu. The two fathers meeting with one another. One has two daughters, the other has two sons. The father of the two sons is acting as an agent for his adult sons, and he says to the father of the two girls that I'm offering you one pruta in exchange for the marriage of your two daughters. Boser noisenu makabel azlin aviko mamoina. Do we focus on the giver and the receiver? If you focus on the father, so you have the transferal of an acceptable minimal amount of money for marriage. You have one pruta. Odilma, or maybe we focus on the subjects of the marriage. Boser didhu azlinon. You look at the man who's being married and the girl who is being married to that particular man. When you focus on the couples, v'holeka, with regard to each couple, there's only half a pruta per couple. Teku. So this remains unresolved. Boi Rav Papa, bitcha uparascha bepruta mahu. Man says, I want your daughter and your cow, and here, take this pruta. Mi amrinon bitcha b'chatzi pruta parasa b'chatzi pruta. Do we say that the man's intention is that he's giving a half a pruta for the girl and half a pruta for the cow, and that would then be an unacceptable marriage? Oidilma bitcha b'pruta. Or maybe his intention is to say that the pruta I'm giving for the marriage of your daughter. Uparascha b'meshicha. And as far as acquisition of the cow is concerned, that I will do through drawing the cow, through pulling the cow. It's meshicha. Teku. This remains unresolved. Boy Ravashi, bitcha v'karkaoch b'pruta mahu. I'm offering you a pruta for your daughter, and for land. What is his intention? Bitcha v'chatzi pruta v'karkaocha b'chatzi pruta. Is he offering half a pruta for the girl and half a pruta for the land? And that would then not be a legitimate marriage. Oidilma bitcha b'pruta v'karkaocha b'chazoka. I'm intend to marry your daughter for the entire pruta. As far as the land, I'll acquire that through a chazoka. L'kinyin chazoka, the act of acquisition of land through chazoka, whereby the purchaser does some type of physical action to the land representing his acquisition thereof. Teku, this remains unresolved. Before we continue in the Gemara, we glance at the side. We have a topic heading. Hamakadish is Isha b'chefetz. A man who offers an object to a woman in exchange for her agreeing to marry him. Hayim boy shuma. Do we require a formal evaluation to establish the price, the value, the cost of that item? Ubilodov einol mukudeshes, and without a formal assessment of its value, she would not be married. Even though man is offering something of substance to the woman, do we require a formal evaluation? The Gemara. Hahu gavra de'aktish b'shiroi. There was a man that offered shiroi. Shiroi is fabrics, silks to a woman. Rabba Omar lo tzrichi shuma. Rabba says that the marriage will take hold even if the silks were not formally assessed. Rav Yosef Omar tzrichi shuma. Rav Yosef says they need to be formally assessed. There are two lishonos in the Gemara, and the triangles that you see, Roman numerals 1 and 2, are explained on the side under the Mivneh heading. These are shtei lishonos b'inyin omar b'choldehu e boy shuma. If he says to her, be married unto me with these silks b'choldehu, whatever their value is. The Gemara continues. E the Omar law becholdehu kol yamalo pligi de lo tzrichi shuma. Let's take a look at Rashi. B'choldehu hiskatshi bohen kamo shehen. Be married unto me with the silks as they are. D'lo tzrichi shuma. Everyone would agree their formal evaluation is not necessary. The botzer mipruta lo shavu. It's clear that they're not worth less than a pruta. They have a minimum pruta value to them. And the man, the husband, wasn't claiming any specific value. He said, whatever they're worth, be married to me. So according to the first version of Rav Yosef, everyone would agree that that is a legitimate marriage. Another case, E de Omar law, Hamshin. If he said, be married to me in exchange for 50 zuz, or if you like, $50. And he gives the silks as representative of $50. V'lo shavu chamshin. And they're not worth $50. Well, v'lo shavu. They're not worth it, and therefore she's not married. He said, I'm marrying you in exchange for 50. And then he gives her silks that aren't worth 50. That everyone agrees, there's no marriage. Ki pligi, the machlokis rabo and Rav Yosef arises in the case of follows. The Omar chamshin v'shavu chamshin. He offers her silks and they appear to be worth 50. Rashi says v'shavu chamshin at the last line miu lo shamua b'kiyim kodem l'kach. However, they didn't undergo formal assessment by expert appraisers. Rabo Omar lo tzrichi shuma. Dol shavu chamshin. They don't need to have formal undergo formal appraisal. They're worth 50. People, commoners, can see that these silks are worth $50, and you don't need to have formal. You don't need for them to undergo formal assessment in order for the marriage to be established. Rav Yosef Omar tzrichi shuma. They need formal assessment. Since the woman herself is not expert in assessing, so she doesn't have a feeling of security that what she's getting is really worth what it's claimed to be. So according to this version of Rav Yosef, if there isn't a formal assessment when it seems to be worth what it's claimed, but there's lacking formal assessment, she won't be married. However, and we want to focus on the point of difference between the next lashon, the next version, and what we've learned till now, we'd have to focus on the first case, the case that's labeled Aleph, where he said, take these silks and be married to me, whatever their value is. And as Rashi pointed out, it's clear that they're worth at least a pruta. How much they are actually worth, so that he doesn't say, and there's no assessment. You don't need an assessment. Ika di amri, but koldehu nami pliki. The second version of the analysis between Rabbi of Yosef states that even where he says, be married to me, whatever their value is, Rav Yosef will say it's ineffective unless there's a formal assessment. Rav Yosef Amar Shove Kesef Harehu Kekesef. When you're using a money equivalent for marriage, that's called Shove Kesef, something worth money, is to be viewed as money, as cash. Ma Kesef Tekitz, just like cash is fixed, it's a known amount. We continue at the top of Daf Ches. Af shove kesef nami dekayitz. So too, when using something of cash value, of money equivalent, it has to be something fixed, something with an established value. And when we speak about established value, that would mean it would have to have undergone formal assessment. Omar Rav Yosef, Mino Amino Law. Notice we have a diamond. the diamond is split between two lines, so it might look like a triangle, but when you put the two halves together, you'll see it's a diamond. We also have a number one. If you skim down about a third of the way or two-fifths of the way down the page, you'll see a second diamond appearing. On the side of the Gemara, under our mivne, under our structural note, we've written two nisyonos limtzoi mokor ledinoi shel Rav Yosef, two attempts to find a source for Rav Yosef's ruling de boi shuma, that a formal assessment is necessary. The double underline marking that you'll see after this source and after the second source, the diamond number two, the double underline represents shlovim levara b'mam meduba b'mukos, stages of analysis, of clarification, to figure out what is spoken of in these sources. So we go back to the top line of the Gemara, Omar of Yosef Mino Amin Allah, from where do I know that you need to have formal assessment? Tesanya. We quote a source that deals with an Eved Ivri, a Hebrew, a Jewish servant. And the Pasuk says, Mikesef Miknoso. We're not going to get into the context of the Pasuk or the background for the Pasuk, other than stating it's in the context of an Eved Ivri, and the Gemara goes on with that which is relevant to our discussion. Bekesev u nikne ve'eno nikne betvua v'kelim. The source, the Pasuk, is suggesting. And by the way, do note that we have a long answer marking. The source suggests that the Jewish servant is acquired through cash and not through grains nor vessels. Hai tvua v'kelim hechidomi. What is it? What is referred to when you say grains and vessels? Ile modolo maknu behu klau. That transferal of ownership of a Jewish servant cannot take place through tavur kalim. Let's say that a person is selling himself into servitude. The purchaser, are you saying, would not be able to offer the man grains or vessels? It's that it's ineffective. That's not true. Yoshiv Gulaso Amrachmona. And from this pasuk of Yoshiv Gulaso, we learn the rabbi shove kesef ki kesef. Again, we're not getting into the root of how you see these things from the psukim. We're taking it at face value that from the expression Yoshiv Gulaso, we learn that those things that have money value, that have cash value, they are viewed as cash. Cash equivalent is cash. The e de less behu shove pruta, and if the tvu and kalim in the context of the eved ivri, the Jewish servant, the tvu and kalim don't have a minimum pruta value. My iria tvu kalim afilu kesef nami. Why does the source say that there's no deal with tvu and kalim that lack a shove pruta? Even with cash that lacks a shofar pruta, there would be no deal. Why then does the source emphasize tavur v'kelim as not being effective? El olav de'is behu shofar pruta. We're talking about tavur and kelim that have a minimum pruta value. The kevan de lo kaitzi lo, since they haven't been established with their fixed value, they're ineffective. Rashi says at the third narrow line, "V'kevad the lokayetz lo v'alchikomar," and what the source is saying is, "V'eino nikne b'tvua v'kelim elin kain kotzitz domeo." Tvua and kelim will not be effective as a means of payment unless their actual value has been established. So even though we, by looking at it, it's clear that they have a minimum pruta value, but that's not enough to establish a kinyan. When you're using items to represent cash, you have to establish their value through formal assessment. And only then will items be useful in clinching a deal. The Idach, Rabbah, who was of the opinion that you don't need to have Shuma, a formal assessment, How does he understand the source? Hochi komar. Beturas kesef hu nikne, v'ein nikne, beturas tvuah v'kelim, umay ninu chalipin. The Eved Ivri is acquired through cash payment. That's Turas Kesef, where you pay a value payment. Rashi says, Beturas Kesef, Beturas Domim, hu nikne. Bein shenoisim alov kesef, bein shavik kesef, Beturas Domim aknu. If you pay this man in exchange for his agreeing to be your servant, you pay him either cash or items that have cash value. That works when you're giving the item as a means of payment. You're paying him, and he'll keep the item that you're giving him as a cash or cash equivalent payment. That's called Toiras Domim. However, the acquisition of the Eved Ivri will not take place if you do the transaction Betoras Tvua V'Kelim. What does that mean, Betoras Tvua V'Kelim? That's another way of saying if you try to make the acquisition through a Kinyan Chalipin, where you would take a sudar, a handkerchief, a piece of fabric, or whatever, and you give it to the Eved Ivri, and you say, well, by I'm giving you this, you then become mine. So the source that mentioned Mekesef Miknaso, if you buy him Betoras Kesef, you buy him by offering him a payment, a cash payment, or an item of cash value as a means of payment, you thereby acquire his services. If you, however, try to acquire him with the Chalipin method, and Tvua and Kalim, Rashi points out, were often used as in order to generate the Chalipin type kinyan, where the purchaser would offer some grains to the seller, and the seller would thereby transfer the item. In this case, the Eved Ivri is transferring himself to servitude, and then he would give back the tevua, or give back the vessel. That's chalipin. It's not a cash payment, and it's not a cash equivalent payment. It's using the tevua and kalim as a representative or symbolic gesture to generate a transaction. So when you're dealing with an Eved Ivri, that kind of transaction is ineffective. Let's emphasize that according to this approach that we just said, we're acknowledging that tevua v'kelim, that grains and vessels, let's emphasize grains for the time being, can be used in other areas as a means of transaction. It's a means of clinching a deal, where the buyer gives some grains to a seller, and as the seller takes the grains, the item being sold is transferred to the buyer, and then the seller gives back those grains. That's an effective kinyan in general, but not in the case of Eved Ivri, in the case of the Jewish servant. However, Ula Rav Nachman, Diomar Peros Lo Avdi Chalipin, Ma'ikol Ameimar. Rav Nachman is of the opinion that food, peros, literally fruits, in this case grains, cannot generate a kinyan chalipin anywhere. Not just by Eved Ivri, but in general, it's just not something that can be used for chalipin. So then, what are you going to say about the source above? How would Rabbah understand the source if he were to adopt Rav Nachman's approach? Because the source is in effect saying that tevua, was called Toras tevua. Tevua is a means of chalipin, but just not by Eved Knani, not by Eved Ivri. But according to Rav Nachman, that it just the tevua doesn't exist as chalipin. So what is the source excluding? Ela li'olam deles behu shave pruta. So Rabbah explains that the source above is talking about tevua and kelim that don't have a shave pruta of value. Udeko amris, And we asked before, if that's the explanation of the source, my Yirya Tvuva Kalim, why does the source emphasize grains and vessels? Afilu Kesef Nami, even cash that doesn't have a pruta worth of value to it would be ineffective. The Gemara says, the truth is, the Tvuva Kalim, the Tvuva, does not have a pruta worth of value. You'll ask them, what about, why does it mention that and not cash? Well, because lo mi baya komar, it goes without saying. Lo mi baya kesef, the ispe shava pruta in e lo lo. I don't need to tell you that kesef would be effective only if it has a pruta of value in it, and if it doesn't, it's not effective. Aval tvua v'kelim. When it comes to grains and vessels, amar, there was room to think. Let's just say, for argument's sake, that one pruta of tvua, you could make a slice of bread. For half a pruta of tvua, you can make half a slice of bread. People who are famished and they eat a half a slice of bread, it gives them a good feeling. So when it comes to tvuah v'kelim, amar, I would have thought, mi de mikriva hanyasayu, gomar umakni nafshei. The tvuah and kelim, let's emphasize the tvuah, whose hano, whose pleasure is rather immediate. You can get immediate pleasure from it. When it comes to cash, so you have to take the money to a store, to a vendor, after the vendor agrees to sell you something, then you can get benefit from it. But if you're handed, if you possess ready-made, ready goods like grains, you have pleasure in a more immediate fashion. And as a result of that, I would have thought that even though it lacks a pruta in value, a person would be willing to bind himself even for less than a shavah pruta. Komash Malon, the source above says that not so. It has to have a minimum of a pruta of value. But at this point in the Gemara, we've presented an alternative understanding to the source through which we don't see any convincing Tanaic evidence to Rav Yosef's point of view. Rav Yosef was arguing that when you're using cash equivalent items for a transaction for marriage, it needs to be formally assessed. Where do we see that? So the Gemara continues, Omar Rav Yosef, Mino Amin Allah, from where do I know my point of view that even though something may have a minimum value, it's not going to be effective in establishing a marriage unless it had formal assessment? The Sanya, note that we have a long response. The source says, and this source deals with the topic of Pidyon HaBen. Pidyon HaBen is the redemption of a firstborn male child. A couple that has a new baby, it's the woman's firstborn, and she's not a Bas Kohen, or she's not from the Shevet Levi. She's not married to a Kohen, so the child has to be redeemed. The Torah prescribes the payment of five pieces of silver, it's called Chomesh Sloyim, to a Kohen, and upon the Kohen's receipt of the five pieces of silver, the child is thereby redeemed. That's Pidyon HaBen. The source says, Egel zeh lepidyon v'ni. Father of newborn offers a Kohen a calf, and he says, take this calf as redemption for my child. Tal zeh lepidyon v'ni. Take this garment as the payment for redeeming my son. Lo omar klum. He has said nothing. It's ineffective. However, using the same two examples, Egel zeh b'chomesh sloyim lepidyon v'ni. Says, this calf has a 5 selah value, take it as redemption for my son. Likewise, talizu b'chomei shloim, the pidyon b'ni, b'no podui. in these last examples, the child is redeemed. High pidyon hechidami. What are the circumstances behind this source? If you're talking about a calf or a garment that are simply not worth 5 sela, called kamine, is it the father's power to that when he says, take it as 5 sela in the safe of the source, the second half of the source, take it as 5 sela, does he have the power to establish something that doesn't have that value as having that value? Obviously, no. You can't make things up. Rather, what this source is describing is afagav deshavi. Even though the egel and the talus are actually worth 5 sela, the kevan de lo kaitzi lo, and since the egel, the calf, and the talus, the garment in the resha, did not undergo formal assessment, the redemption of the son will not take place. Rashi, right across from here, says deshavi. They are worth 5 sela. V'afilu achi kotani resha, and even so, the first part of this source said lo omar klum ha'ovlo nishamu. Since they didn't undergo formal evaluation, the father has said nothing. It's ineffective. So at this point, Rav Yosef would have his source. That formal assessment is necessary in order to generate a kinyan. The Gemara rejects this. Lo, li'olam delo shavi. The egel and the talus are really not worth 5 sela. Ukigon de kabil kayin iluya. But the kohen accepts these less than 5 sela items as if they're worth 5 sela. In a case like that, then let us assume then that the seifa where it said egel zeh b'chomesh shleim l'pidyon b'ni, that's where the kohen was willing to accept the egel that was not worth 5 sela as if it were worth 5 sela, the garment that's not worth 5 sela, but to this kohen, it was as if it were 5 sela. Kiha de Rav Kahana shokal sudra bepidyon haben. An example of what we just said is Rav Kahana, who accepted a turban as the means of redeeming someone's son. Omar le, Rav Kahana said to the father, ledidi chazili chomesh shleim. This turban is worth, to me, 5 sela. Even though when you look at it objectively, ask anyone on the street, is this turban worth 5 sela? They would say no. Rav Kahana said, to me it's worth 5 sela. And therefore it's effective. We have a point that takes a few lines to develop. Om Rav Ashi, lo amoron elo kagon Rav Kahana degava rabahu, umi boye le sutra. This idea of someone viewing something that's really not worth it, not worth 5 sela, as if it's worth 5 sela, is limited to people like Rav Kahana that are great men, and because of their greatness, Rashi explains, they do not walk bareheaded. They, because of their stature, they always need a. They always have a head covering. This is characteristic of people of high esteem. They need something on their heads. So, we'll say a person like that that has a pressing need for it. For him, something that's not worth it to others, nevertheless, to him, it's really worth it. The Gra adds that when the Gemara makes reference to Gavra Rabba, Rav Kahana was a great man. A great man, a person of great scholarship, Torah knowledge. He also understands how to be mochel, how to be forgiving, accepting something that's not worth 5 sela as if it's worth 5 sela. But to the general public, you wouldn't be able to redeem the child by giving a kohen that's not a gavaraba something that lacks five selen value and expect it to work. That's what the Gemara means here. Aval kuli alma lo. And another illustration of this is the kiha de morbar avashi zavan sudra miime de rabba mikubi. Morbar avashi bought a turban from the mother of Rabba from Kubi. Kubi is the name of a place. Shavi asara betleisar. It was worth 10 on the open market, but he paid 13.40. He paid quite a bit more than its value, because Mar Bravashi was a great man, and he had a pressing need for this head covering. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.